My name is Lockie Phillips, and I am a horse trainer, an instructor, a coach, an international clinician, and a horse dad. This is the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast, your pit stop in a troubled world to explore horse training that puts the horse first. You can expect controversy because, well, frankly, putting the horse first remains controversial. You can expect my opinions because I'm here to share them. You can expect facts because I'm here to share them. You can expect mistakes and you can expect, well, humanity here because I am fundamentally a flawed human being. This place is a place for our guests and for myself to share our experiences freely and openly to help reach people just like you who have felt things or experienced things or thought things about horses that you might be afraid to speak of in other places. Here, we explore those things. This is your place to come home to horsemanship that just trains horses without saddling them with emotional baggage. Hello, everyone. I hope you're well. Thank you for joining me again here on the podcast. I'm aware, firstly, that I have some apologies to make. My apologies is not releasing podcasts every week like I had intended at the start of the year. Frankly, it's just a time issue at this moment because I'm really, really busy at the moment doing work that I really, really love. However, it's taking up my time and I'm unable to release the podcasts in a manner that is reliable, but I've got some recordings put away with some really awesome conversations to round out the year. And it is my hope to publish a little more regularly from now until the end of the year. However, I'm coming on today with a solo episode because I want to talk to you about some difficult stuff. I know that's very out of character, like me talking about difficult stuff. How unusual, like it would be maybe unpredictable of me to talk about easy stuff instead. However, something happened recently with the community whereby I shared a post, actually a story called Stick Horsemanship, discussing my point of view around leverage and sticks. I won't go into too much depth about that. However, what it caused is a cascade of events. People started writing to me, and they started writing to me their stories. They started writing to me their stories of what they had witnessed in the horse world. And these stories were devastating. They were horrible to hear. And it was all in conjunction with what I was teaching in my current group coaching program. At the moment, I'm teaching Homecoming 3. We're teaching, so I work in a team. We're teaching a program called Homecoming 3, which is called The Nuance of Non-Escalating Pressure. And we had a week just now focused on sticks, whips, and arm extenders and looking at that more deeply. And this week happened to coincide with also people in the group coaching program on our many, because we do many of them, Zoom calls each week, sharing their stories out loud with their voice in a community of 30 to 60 people at any one time are on the meetings. We're having 30 to 60 people at any one time on the meetings. There's about 175, 178 people in the course overall. So in the last 10 days, I've experienced an opening of the floodgates of people beginning to tell me their stories and also tell the community that I take care of their stories of what they've witnessed. And I'm going to share with you those stories, some of those stories today. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to read them out. So why? Why sit here and read devastating stories of abuse on a podcast? You know, isn't the world heavy enough right now? Isn't life difficult enough? And don't I already kind of talk to the choir in a sense? The people listening to this podcast, aren't they already further ahead? Aren't they wanting to move on? Aren't they already past that? Also, I deal with a lot of highly sensitive people whom really cannot listen to stories of abuse like that. There are certain things I find it really hard to look at. I can't look at photos or videos of animals in intensive meat production facilities. I can't watch photos or videos of animals being slaughtered for meat. I mean, I can, but I really struggle. I also really struggle watching videos of or photos of animals having scientific experiments performed on them. I find that really troubling. But one thing I'm able to listen to and look at is people abusing horses. I can look at it and I can listen to it. I feel like it's my personal responsibility to do so, because if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, witness it, or see it, did it ever fall? And I feel like it's my duty and responsibility to witness this, because there are a lot of people out there who think I am radical, who are pushing back against the horse first training approach this year because they believe we have overcorrected. And there is currently a concerted effort amongst some really prominent people to pull the pendulum back towards what is, in my opinion, systems of abuse. Now, they might not be outright abuse, because there's different layers of abuse. Abuse can exist in extreme ways. It can exist in light ways. But after sharing these stories, I'm hoping you'll get off the fence and renounce anything that's Diet Coke. So it's not full-fat Coca-Cola. It's not full-on abuse, but like Diet Coke version of it. So we're not like beating horses up against trees, but we are consistently hurting them or making them uncomfortable to keep them moving forwards for us. I think they're in the same category. One's more extreme, one is less extreme. But in the wash, when it comes out, they've been washed in the same waters. And I'll never forget at the beginning of this year, my friend Kim Hallin, shout out to Kim Hallin, she's ahead of her time, she's a good friend, great friend even, shared with me a blog or a Substack that she follows. And it's a Substack from an astrologer that she really likes. And, you know, you might be skeptical of astrology. I've got a healthy skepticism of astrology too. And I've also found it really fascinating. But this astrologer said that 2025 will have many things going on. And one of the things that's going on is the need for people to get off the fence on important issues. And when that happens, when you get off the fence, there'll be a fork in the road. One group of people, when they get off the fence, they get off the fence because of arrogance, narcissism, and hubris. And they isolate themselves into, overly proud, arrogant containers of self-reflection, etc. Okay, so that's one crowd. They get off the fence for those purposes. And another group will get off the fence because of humility, because of gratitude, and because they are calling their energy back into their body and claiming who they are exactly. So I share these stories from the community, not so that I can distress people, not so that I promote abuse, not so that I give it more airtime, not so that I can upset people or engage in rage bait or make life more difficult. That's not why I share it. I share it because it is the truth. And the first episode of this podcast I ever recorded was called Feels Like Telling the Truth. Truth is really important to me. In fact, it's written in my astrological chart that my profound need to tell the truth is almost Aquarian in nature, but I digress. So it's the truth. Firstly, that's why I share it. The truth is devastating. That's why I share it. I share it because if these stories are as ubiquitous, common, and worldwide, widespread as I believe they are, it means the horse industry is in big trouble. And we need to be really clear about that and respond accordingly. If a house was on fire, you're not going to wring your hands about it. You're going to do something about it. And there are too many people who are fence sitting on issues around abuse and violence towards horses. There are too many people who are advocating for a quote unquote a middle path, like a balanced approach to horsemanship. But what they're really doing is wanting to continue licensing methods that abuse a horse at some level, even at a subtle level. They want to continue licensing that because for a lot of people, if they didn't have those tools at their disposal, they wouldn't be able to keep a horse moving forward in their training, literally or figuratively. So I would like more people to get off the fence and to make a decision. Are we horse first or are we person first? That has to be a first clear decision. And we have to make that decision before we can explore the interesting nuance and detail and study that can follow. We have to make a clear decision. Am I in or am I out? And in case there's anyone who is listening who feels like they are fence sitting on subjects which are important to horses, I hope that by sharing this story, these stories, you become galvanized, not radicalized. You become clear-headed, not depressed. You become furious rather than anxious. And that this fury motivates and mobilizes you to put some effort into change. Change for you, change for a friend next to you, change just where you are. Whether or not you sign up for my courses, I don't care on this subject. I would just like to have an industry where the bar is not so low. I would like to compete, if we are to compete. I would like my business to be competitive in a market where the standard is not, do you hit horses or not? I would like the standard to be higher than that. I would like the standard to be higher than, do you inflict fear and intimidation upon horses because you have no time to train them without it? I would like the standard to be higher than that. I would like the standard to be higher than people continuing to confuse others and say, it's not the tool, it's the hands that wield it. And then continue to put tools in our hands that have physiological properties that are undeniably coercive. I would like to have a higher standard than that. I am wanting to enjoy work and a career when I travel around the world where the mere fact that I don't force horses to do it is not seen as radical, is not seen as unusual, and is not seen as exceptional, because that's been my experience. I've had people report to me that when they've seen me work with others and with their horses and that I don't force them and that we work on it technically and patiently, but also without becoming anxious or stuck, right? I'm very much encouraging people to get unstuck and to take action, and that taking action doesn't mean dominating the horse, that when they see this, it makes so much sense to them and their mind is blown because they've genuinely never seen it before. And that is a low bar, and I would like the bar to be higher. I would like people to raise the bar. And to do that, we have to first acknowledge where we are, exactly where we are. Vipassana, accept what is, truthfully, first, without resistance or run or blame or guilt or judgment, to accept what is so that we can move forwards fully embodied, knowing what the honest starting point is. Because if you don't have a starting point, you don't know where you're going. So, anyone who has a sensitive disposition or is not in a place in their nervous system or in their mind or in their life or in their day to listen to potentially egregious stories of abuse that are nonetheless ubiquitous and commonplace in the horse world, I would advise you to stop playing this podcast now and instead enjoy one of my other more lighthearted, although still perhaps interesting conversations here on this podcast. Okay, So that is the trigger warning. Let's move on. I'm just pulling these up on my phone. All right, I've got many of them. Here's one. I went to a clinic and the clinician didn't like that my horse was bonded to another horse there, so proceeded to ask me to release my horse and had his assistants chase her around the arena, whipping her if she got close to her friend. I was shocked and appalled, in tears, but didn't know how to stop it. I was too intimidated. She was a 21-year-old horse and became a sweaty mess with welts on her body. I know better now with experience. Luckily, my sweet mare forgave me. If only I could forgive myself for letting that happen. I swear the clinician and his helpers enjoyed what they did. By the way, it didn't break my horse's bonding to her friend. Their exercise failed, thankfully. Next story. A trainer offered to do something similar to my girl. This is in relationship to the previous story. So someone had already listened to this story and replied to this previous story. A trainer offered to do something similar to my girlie to reinforce her draw to me. He wanted to chase and beat her with a stick every time she left me so that everything was terrifying apart from being next to me, and that would make us a good liberty partnership. I obviously declined the offer. Next story. I went to a clinic and had an experience with a coach who insisted my rescue horse be hit with a whip. I was belittled when I refused to do so. I ended up getting the results in time and did not once need to resort to a whip. Next story. I got asked to leave a boarding property I had my horse at recently for calling out shitty behavior. The caretakers pulled another person's horse out of the paddock, belted him with the lead rope, put him in the round yard, and proceeded to chase him with a whip. I went over to ask him, what the hell was he doing? His answer, he was stirring all of the other horses up. I calmly asked him how he thought chasing him was going to fix the problem, and I was told I should mind my own business. I cannot make this stuff up. I was furious for that poor horse who had done nothing wrong at all other than canter to the end of the paddock with the rest of the herd. I do not regret advocating for that horse, informing his owner, who works away and was appalled and moved him that week. Even if I did have the police called on me, had to pack and leave and find another place within the next hour. This kind of stuff needs to be called out when people see it. And I couldn't agree more with the fact that it has to be called out. Not telling these stories allows them to go unchecked. Telling these stories, especially in my container, which is a container where we can tell these stories because we're not trying to hide abuse. We're not trying to uphold these practices. We're trying to be against these practices and prevent them in the first place. So my community is the place where we can, maybe for the first time in someone's life, put voice to what we've witnessed so that it has no power anymore. Okay, next story. When training and competing in modern dressage, a highly respected clinician and well-decorated trainer coached me to tie plastic bags to the end of my dressage whip to absolutely terrify my horse into going forward and taught me that was how I was going to get him forward enough for third level. I don't know how this horse ever forgave me for all the bullshit things I did and tried when I was too new and too afraid to think for myself. Next story. I brought my horse to a highly respected and recommended natural horsemanship trainer for a clinic. On day one, he took my horse from me and proceeded to repeatedly smack him in the face for having his head up, as it apparently meant my horse wasn't respecting me. I was too shocked, appalled, and intimidated to say anything in the moment, but I put my horse away with many apologies, informed the organizer and trainer privately that I was horrified and disgusted, traveled my horse home, obviously skipping the next 2 days of the clinic, turned him away for a week to give him time to reset, and slowly returned to groundwork. He forgave me, but I will never forgive myself. I apologized to him for it and thanked him for his forgiveness when he passed away this year. Next story. I think one of the most unexpected, randomly appearing horror moments for me was when my friend told me about how the now previous owner of the horse she rode instructed her to just hit the horse in the face with the butt of a whip when she turned to her for advice when the mare would munch on the bushes by the mounting block a lot. Context: horse is 20 years old, barefoot, bitless, lives in a herd, and this previous owner is a therapist whom I respected greatly for her in-depth horse care and knowledge. It felt like betrayal. I apologize if some of these stories have a slightly odd syntax or grammar, because a lot of my followers don't have English as a first language, and they're doing their best, of course. I watched as my former employer ponied her filly in a round pen, trying to force her to trot, yanking the filly's head in a tightrope halter up onto the rump of the already puffing older mare, loudly telling the older mare if she didn't act like that, she wouldn't get treated this way. I believe the punishment was for her pushy behavior at feed time. Mind you, this was done in the middle of the day. Needless to say, I left that farm as quickly as I could manage. Next story. To add to this topic, when I was 11, my quote-unquote aggressive childhood hard horse bit someone cleaning his stall. My quote-unquote trainer told me to go in well after the incident and beat him into a corner with a whip so that he wouldn't move until I left the stall. I refused, so she did it for me, insisting it was her liability if he injured someone in her care. I still find it hard to forgive myself for not advocating for my horse, but I eventually chose a more peaceful approach to horsemanship and shared 21 loving and non-violent years with my horse, who only recently passed away at 31 years old. Next story. I have a barn in my area that is super obsessed with a certain trainer who has been caught using abusive techniques, including spurring a horse till bleeding. I toured it, the barn, before I knew about their obsession with him. They never met my horse before, but were convinced that multiple things were wrong with him and insistent that I move him there so that they can set him straight. I was gobsmacked that they felt that strongly without seeing him in person that something was wrong with him. In reality, there wasn't anything wrong with him, except he was green at the time, but the experience left a bad taste in my mouth and I never went back. They also have this trainer come to their barn multiple times a year for clinics, which helped my decision against moving him there. Wise. Next story. I was taught by my very first trainer to get off your horse and kick him in his chest when he acts like that. I never did. I refused and found a new farm and trainer to work with. Then I found my beloved Michelle, and they are referencing Michelle Knapp, who is a senior coach on my team, and there's episodes of my podcast with her here. We must not forget, this is the next story. We must not forget the Olympic level rider who, in front of a clinic crowd, instructed amateurs to beat their horses relentlessly with a crop until they jumped. And that there was, quote, no better way to do it, end quote. And then when I wrote a letter calling them on it, they gave me lip service about how they, quote, wish it was different, end quote, and continued on their way, changing nothing. Permissive violence from top-level riders that trickles down into our local barns. I'm over it. Me too. Next story. I will forever hold the body memory of the sweetest senior former hunter-jumper horse in a therapeutic riding center, being taught the phases of escalating pressure by a lead rope swinging aggressively until the buckle was hitting him in the face. Breaks my heart every time I think of this sweet, sweet gelding and the price he paid for our natural horsemanship, quote, education, end quote. In what other world or industry would this overt abuse be acceptable? Good question. Next story. I was helping to put miles on a young green horse. We were in an outdoor arena when her herd mates went running by and she got really excited, wanting to join them, and reared up a bit at the edge of the fence. I was told by the lead trainer there to start riding with a water bottle. So if she did it again, I could hit her on top of the head with it, and the water that comes out, she'll think she's bleeding and learn to stop. I just got off and helped the horse find calm again from the ground. The owner of the same place told me, while tacking up a different horse, to hold a whip up in my left hand and to smack the horse in the face with it when she turns to bite while doing up the girth. Of what didn't take much research to learn was an incredibly ill-fitting saddle, obviously. I, of course, wouldn't do it and just stopped riding there altogether. Next story. I very recently had an older family friend who's owned horses decide he wants to, quote, help, end quote, with my four-year-old mare and came and started chasing her around the ring with a whip. And when she would stop and tell me very obviously that she didn't want to be here, I tried to voice that, and he would tell me no, she was being dominant and bossy, and if we stop, she gets what she wants, even though she obviously didn't want any of this. And then he proceeds to say, we mustn't submit. And the next day he said he called a lady that trains horses, and she said to chase her with a plastic bag if she tries to stop. It was horrible to watch, and because he was an older man and I am a younger girl, any attempt to defend my mare and explain she wasn't being dominant by kicking out and actually was just trying to say she was uncomfortable was ignored. He's now left for good, and I'm left to help my before unaffected young mare work through the issues and distrust that came from those few mornings with the whip. Next story. A barn near my grandparents' house that I've been going to for years, the new owner, the nicest lady to talk to, was holding a three-year-old stud colt in an arena with another horse and some people milling about. As she instructed the person on board the horse, the colt got fidgety, and she smacked him in the chest with a whip until he stood still. When I asked her gently why, she said, he should know better. 3 years old. Done and said with the same attitude that I would put on clothes, as if it was entirely normal and I was out of place for questioning it. Next story. Oh my God. We used to be friends with a breeder in, I will not say what country. My daughter and I watched in horror as she kicked her foal in the chest to, quote, back him up and show him respect, end quote. My 8-year-old horse-loving daughter, who is now 16, and I are still mortified and haven't spoken to this breeder since that day. So sad people think they need to be that way to demand respect. Next story. Thing is, it is not just the obvious abuse. It is also the unwillingness to see the horse and through that cause damage. I've seen lame horses on racetracks having muscles torn off their pelvis. Quote, just one more race because the price is really good. End quote. I've seen a pony with completely ruined tendons in both front legs because three trainers and riders and trainer sat international level told the owner the pony wasn't in pain, but just naughty, and to just push him more. I've seen draw reins being used so violently that the neck's thoracic sling was so damaged that the horse had huge edemas and was unable to trot and gallop. All of this I saw within the last half year. Next story. I was training at a very well-respected yard, and we had a new stallion in one of the stables on our block. The mares and foals went past his box on their way to the field each day. He was very polite. He did call a little, but in a fairly chilled, can I get your number way? Pretty impressive for a four-year-old. I kept finding this whip by his box and tidied it away. Then the head of our section of the yard stopped me and told me to hit him with it when he called to the mares, as he had to, quote, stop that, end quote. It broke my heart. I never did it. Same horse was led out first time in his new home in a chifney for no reason I could see. He spooked at a plant pot, got socked in the mouth, and naturally reared in shock. He was then labeled a horse who rears. I left soon after. Next story. Lockie, I considered sending you stories too. But sadly, I had to realize I had too many. As I said in my comment on your new post, I rode and worked with horses for 11 years at a local barn. We taught mostly kids. We had summer camps, that sort of thing. I was always the odd one out for my approach to horses, riding them in a rough and cruel way, hitting them when they, quote, misbehaved, end quote, while being tacked up, kicking them, whipping them, etc., were all considered normal and were done in front of several children all the time. Eventually, this was the cause of me leaving the place. I tried to fight it for so long, for years, and I stayed because I cared about the horses there so deeply, like they were my own. Leaving felt like letting them down, and it broke my heart. There was just nothing more I could do. They kept getting sick with equine asthma, or I'm honestly not sure how it's called in English, but they kept getting coughs, and they were used and used until the very end, and then sold. Sold somewhere mysterious, of course. We were all told they were retired, but now I know they were sold to slaughter in, I'll say the country, now I know they were sold to slaughter in Austria. I live in Hungary, and Austria buys lots of these used-up horses for slaughter. This is a topic that could be discussed for hours upon hours. It's widespread, it's normalized, it's everywhere. Only those who are complicit will deny it. During those 11 years, I rode at many different barns, smaller ones, bigger ones, cheap ones, expensive ones, but they all had one thing in common: treating horses like they were constantly misbehaving or trying to be naughty, or that they deserved harsh riding practices because otherwise they won't behave or won't respect you. I had a serious riding accident, which eventually led me to stop riding altogether, but I left the equestrian world behind because of everything I mentioned above. I miss horses so much, but I refuse to associate with these people anymore. Me too. Everyone take a breath, because I know this is really hard to hear, and let me repeat and reiterate and be very, very clear. I am sharing this with the intention to get people off the fence. If you're already off the fence and you find this distressing, stop listening. Just stop listening. I've got plenty of other content for you. But I share this to get you off the fence. I share it because it's the truth. And I share it because apparently every single horse person on the earth has stories like this, myself included. And almost every horse person has actually participated in things like this, And I want us to forgive ourselves immediately if we've gotten off the fence and to start taking action to move forward. But I'm going to continue to share these stories because these stories deserve to be shared and to be put into the light so that we can disempower and embarrass the people who do this to horses. It's embarrassing that they do this to horses. Next story. I'm just lining this story up. It's a longer one. Give me a moment. I used to show Arabians when I was younger. They'd stand the horses in the stall and wrap their necks in neoprene to make them look thinner. Fans off, Florida summer, 90 degree heat and 90% plus humidity. Often tied, where they couldn't reach water, no turnout allowed, lived in 12 by 12 boxes, couldn't hang their heads out. Stacked shoes and pads to make them move bigger. Cranked heads down with draw reins. Wailing on the mouth and yanking like a seesaw so hard when they wouldn't manufacture collection. My trainer would jump off and kick my horse in the stomach mid-ride. I was just a 10-year-old kid, but we knew it wasn't right. We were told this is how it is, and we'd just freeze in horror. I'd never forgive myself. I used to sneak him out in turnout before the trainers got there and sneak in and loosen his sweat. We moved our horses out to our property and retired them and myself from showing, but I think about this almost every day. Next story. Trying to rope a wild horse in a round pen to break her in as quickly as possible to address her health. They kept running circles, so they made her continue to run circles for over an hour. By the end, she was dripping sweat off her belly like rain. Justification. If she wants to run, I'll make her run. This is all her choice. It'll end when she makes the right choice. 4 months later, they can get a halter on her, and she knows some pressure, but still has to be chased and roped to be caught. 3 to 4 trainings a week, 4 months. Still has to be 3 to 4 trainings a week for 4 months. Still has to be roped to get the halter on because the training is that uncomfortable for her. Combined with excessive food rewards as luring and compensation for her discomfort, she is now volatile. She used to really stop and think about things, but now she is rushing to figure out what the person wants to avoid the fear, punishment, and seek food reward. Still has the same health struggles that they were using as justification for it in the beginning. She worries about every car that drives by that looks like the trainer's car. That's what I managed to save on my phone. There were more messages sent to me, but they had names of exact individuals or had descriptions that were too descriptive that would lead to specific individuals. So I have not shared those publicly, but I also got some on my Facebook page and I'm going to share a couple of those. Hi, Lockie. Another horror story that I would like to see addressed is what happens when horses are brought to breed inspections. For example, my Friesian was, quote, inspected, end quote, at a CUR in the US. I'm not sure what that is. I only went because my trainer pushed for it, and I trusted that it would not be as stressful as a horse show since he wasn't going to even be ridden. I was horrified when my trainer gave the lead to a runner, slipped him some cash, and said, "You need to hold on to this one." I then saw the runner hold tightly to the lead that was attached to a bit, mind you, and then a young woman used a whip and a loud shaker thing to get my horse as animated as possible. Well, My horse did get loose and galloped straight to me as I was on the rail watching. I wish I had demanded that he be returned immediately to me. I wish I ran to him and took him back out of the arena. My eyes are full of tears and my chest heart whenever I think of it. My horse won the championship and was highly rated as one of the best geldings and only second in the entire cur by a model mare. I threw the stupid ribbons in a box, and as I'm moving, I found them and want to throw them away. But I might keep one as a heavy reminder of the price my poor horse paid for it. It has taken a long time to forgive myself, and while I have forgiven myself, I will never forget and won't let my horses ever go through any of that again. I wish people would understand the horses in these situations are not showing off and strutting their stuff. They are literally terrified. Thank you for your post and for sharing these stories. Next story. Hi, Lockie. I wanted to share a story as well after I read your post. My childhood horse was being boarded at a local barn owned by a renowned reigning horse trainer. He had a dog that was super aggressive with the horses if he got into the paddocks. I was there without my mum cleaning stalls to help with boarding costs. The trainer's dog got into the paddock with my horse and bit him bloody on his fetlocks. He ended up needing a few stitches. My horse eventually kicked the dog, and when the trainer saw it, he dragged my horse out of the paddock, tied him to a tree so he was unable to move, hobbled him and kicked him repeatedly, and then took a whip to his legs to, quote, sack him out, end quote. I was absolutely horrified. I asked him to stop. I cried and begged him to stop, but I was only 11. He didn't listen. When confronted by my parents, he asked us to leave the farm because my horse was, quote, too rank, end quote, and I was, quote, too coddled, end quote. We were going to move anyway because of this and other incidents. I grew up riding in the 90s, and looking back now, I understand the pervasive abuse that was just being the leader, but this incident was one of the most profound for me, and the thing is, it absolutely was commonplace at this farm to pull in and see horses tied, hobbled, and sacked out like that was part of his, quote, training, end quote. Next story. As a kid, my only exposure to horses was at summer camp. So a few days of the year, I would get to experience these wonderful creatures. One of the first horses I rode at summer camp was a buckskin named Blue. He didn't want to walk. I was content sitting there. The mere fact that I was even able to be around horses was enough. The camp counselor said, kick him. No, kick him. No, kick him. No. He then proceeded to come up to the horse and punch him in the gut. Did the horse move? No. I guess from a young age, things felt wrong. Sadly, my full-fledged intro to the industry in my early 20s was full of and continued to be full of abuse masked as training and connection. I came into the horse world from a very positive dog training background, so to say I was shocked at the horrors was an understatement. Currently unraveling from the years of participation, but that's another story. Some things I was told or witnessed or was a part of. In the jumping circles, people would put nails on the rails so the horses lifted their legs higher. Cutting trainers used collars with nails on the inside to train bitless cutting. Round penning horses until they could barely stand and then looking like the hero because you could ride them. Tying horses' legs up and forcing them to lie down to earn respect and complete submission, quote unquote. Constantly using a whip or a stick as an extension of your arm, literally becoming so reliant on it that one became extremely skilled at a well-timed whack, whatever the F that is. Being told a horse can't feel the sting of a whip on a regular basis. Along the same lines, being told a well-fitted saddle with evenly distributed weight is like wearing no saddle at all, huh? Seeing horses live in 10 by 10 cement stalls and with rats and no windows, only to be pulled out multiple times a day for lessons, emaciated horses, 2-year-olds, most recently, being ridden over 100 kilometers and earning the right to get proper shoes now that they have, quote, proved themselves. And when I say emaciated, I mean their spines protruding out of their bodies with saddle marks on their shoulders and backs. A neighbor recently told me a story of how she beat a two-day-old foal with a bucket because it tried to nip her, and now it's, quote, the best horse she's ever owned, end quote. Horses tied to posts to teach patience and then respect, and then let's amplify the post tying by blindfolding them, throwing a saddle on, and getting a person up there because why not? Truly, the list goes on. Abuse comes in many forms. Injured horses with owners refusing to provide vet care, atrocious feet, and still using the horse. Poor diet if they are provided one at all. I can almost not read this next part. Poor diet if they are provided one at all. Removing a dead foal who was half eaten by dogs from its mother after it had been there for 3 days and the owner didn't notice. Providing pain meds to a horse with a broken, rotting jaw. This horse literally looked like a truck ran over it. When the news was brought to the owner, they said, quote, I'm not sure what to do, end quote. I truly could go on. I am most thankful now for having a sacred space that's mine, and nobody can tell me what to do anymore. Well, that last one was the hardest one for me to read. And the person who sent me that last one is someone who attended a clinic with me a year ago. And I will never forget supporting this person in a clinic environment. And I remember thinking to myself that this person was clearly intelligent, kind, skilled, and had many signs of confidence about them. But I wondered why she was so afraid in the space. I wondered why she was so timid in the space. I wondered why it was so difficult for her to be there. And they shared with me that it was essentially the first environment in the horse world they'd been in where they were able just to train the horses without all of this stuff. So, next time you read a post from a trainer you like that is advising us to pull back on kindness, that is advising you, it's okay, use the stick. It's your hands, it's not the stick. Sticks can move at the speed of sound, some of them. Sticks are built with physiological properties that exert leverage, kinetic transfer from a wider portion of the whip down your hand. Leverage is designed to lift heavy loads and make them feel light to you. No matter how soft your hand is moving, that whip is always moving harder at the tip. And even if you are using it as a true arm extender, only gesturing, pointing, and touching without whip or sting, can you 100% guarantee that horse has never been hit with a stick before? All learning is accumulative in horses, and they never forget. If that horse was hurt with a whip at one point in their life, and now you are using it without hurting them, but they are responding to it, you are benefiting still from that layer of hurt that is accumulated earlier in that horse's life. It also makes horses more dangerous to have them forced into the craft of horsemanship somehow. And we have to forgive ourselves immediately. Forgive yourself immediately, because if this is standard practice, how on earth were any of us supposed to know better or do better? Forgive ourselves immediately. There's no space for guilt here, only space for accountability and responsibility and moving forward. And if you're already off the fence, I salute you. Keep going. But if you're not off the fence yet, I want you to consider where you stand. They're harrowing stories, and I find them horrific and disgusting. And I'm tired of being seen like the problem for advocating against this stuff. I'm not the problem. I'm not crazy. And neither are you. Keep moving forwards, guys. I love you. Thank you for being here. Hopefully the next episode won't be so heavy. Take care and be kind to your horses, guys.